You are listening, of course, to Roadkill Radio here on the mighty nascent Roadkill Radio Network. That's sort of just burgeoning or
it's
something.
Just...
If you'd like to participate by sending us an email, please do so at roadkillradio@live.ca. We'd love to hear from you. We're getting towards the end of the show, and as advertised, it's just before we get to our final guest, who's John Martin of the University of the Fraser Valley, fresh of criminology. We have there's a couple of little things, a little update, and hopefully we'll run out of time before you get to attack me on my HST position, but we'll make a little time. Just want to let you guys know, and you've heard about this
before.
There's
always next
week,
Terry.
That's right. You might remember that in February of 2009, I wrote a pretty good little op-ed piece for the National Post based on the Canadian Rainbow Health Coalition's complaint to the Canadian Human Rights Commission. And the this complaint was alleging that Health Canada and another federal body were guilty of homophobia because they hadn't launched special programs to take into account all the special high-risk and high and dangerous medical outcomes, psychological, physical outcomes that gays and lesbians are exposed to because of that lifestyle or that inclination, sexual orientation, as they said it. And at the time, I pointed out that this was kind of ironic that they would complain about that because, of course, you know, it's one of the themes of this ongoing themes of our show here is that, well, gee, you know, when Kerry Simpson says something like that, that there are adverse medical and psychiatric outcomes from that sexual orientation, the practice of that sexual orientation that she's accused and other people are accused of being intolerant.
And far more colorful language than that.
I know that. But at the on the other hand, though, here you've got the Canadian Rainbow Health Coalition saying this thing and actually itemizing all the different things that where their health outcomes are worse than the regular public, and so I had a little fun with that, and the National Post did too, and I wrote an article about that, and that's more than 2 years ago now. I'm wondering what happened with it. The only press that's received since then was in May of last year, a little more than a year ago, when one of the complainants, Jens Hellquist, did an update for Extra West magazine or newspaper and said that there were submissions being made by both parties, the complainants and the commission, on whether and Health Canada, on whether the Canadian Human Rights Commission actually had jurisdiction in the case. And that was apparently to go to the commission for a decision. And that was 13 months ago. So I gave it a few months. And a few more months after that, I said, I'm going to find out what's going on with this thing.
You're
and maybe
just
I can
so patient,
write,
Terry.
I can write a follow-up you story guys, and bring the news to Roadkill Radio here.
You're so easy to get along with.
I am.
Yes,
I am. Yeah, absolutely. I'm the easiest guy. But answer my bloody phone calls, will you? Because I sent them an email in March of this year. They didn't respond to it. Okay, so emails, I get a million emails. I'll do this. I'll call their media office. Identified myself as a, you know, contributor to the National Post, as a national newspaper, as co-host of Roadkill
and
Radio.
On Jennifer Lynch's mobs list.
And I'm on Jennifer Lynch's list too. That's right. You should pay attention. So I sent them a phone. I phoned them on April 5th, laying out. Say, I want an update on this. What's going on? Nothing. I phoned them again May 3rd. By the way, the phone number is 613-943-9118. And maybe you guys, anybody out there wants to call and say, answer Terry O'Neill's question, damn it. Phoned them again May 3rd, didn't hear back. Phoned them again May 24th, did not hear back. Phoned them again this morning, did not hear back. Messaged again. How many messages, folks? Email, phone. That's five messages. Not a single word back. Maybe it's because the Canadian Human Rights Commission has a new acting commissioner. Or Jennifer Lynch is gone. Didn't you brought a clipping in a couple of months ago about where she's landed. I don't know. So I'm frustrated by that. I would like to know. But, of course, I'm having a little fun as well about their, you know, for all... I could have this go on for another couple of months, and I'll call them every day and see how long. And then I can write about that and bring that story here to the to all of you here on Roadkill Radio. But that's one of the reasons.
I think you're being discriminated against, Terry.
Yeah, maybe I am. Well, that's one of the reasons.
File a human rights complaint against
them. I think the human rights, the Canadian human rights.
That will get their attention.
All right, file a human rights. Well, you know, I could file a Freedom of Information application and find out how my messages are being handled.
No, no,
you know, maybe they got big memos out there about Terry O'Neill, don't answer. Maybe there's a standing order. Don't answer his phone calls.
That's discrimination.
I'm sure it is.
So there you go.
You know, they can discriminate
for
against
me. For failing
if they want.
To provide me with the required information. Well, they have to, because perhaps you want to intervene in that case. You have a right to know the legal status of that case.
I want to know what's going on. I really do. And I'm a member of the public, and I certainly should
and
know
about
that.
And you're Terry O'Neill.
Well, you know what? Whoever, they should answer their bloody phone calls. You know, that's ridiculous. But that's another reason, I would think, why we should get rid of the Canadian Human Rights Commission. And there are multitudinous reasons, and someone that agrees with me and you, Carrie, on all of this is John Martin, the professor of criminology at the University of the Fraser Valley, who recently wrote exactly about that issue. Professor John Martin, welcome to Roadkill Radio. Are you with us?
I am.
Oh, hang on a second. We can't hear you very well. We're just going to turn it up. Okay, now we can hear you.
Okay.
Hi. Yes, very good. Thank you
very
much.
Hi, Terry. Hi, Carrie.
Hi.
Hello, hello.
So you wrote a column to the Abbotsford Times earlier this month saying the Rights Commission, not just the Canadian Human Rights Commission, but rights commissions all across Canada have to go. What set you off this time?
Yeah, it's been kind of an ongoing issue for a number of years. I guess the latest one was I had an email exchange. You might recall the fellow that got nailed for the heckling in the comedy club.
Guy Earl.
And, right. So, you know, when I found out the result of that, he's got a $15,000 bill he's supposed to square up with him. It just got me thinking again, it's time to make some more noise here. Because the reforms that a lot of us were hoping for a few years ago haven't happened yet, and I think we need to turn the heat up on them again. And, you know, I was really hopeful two and a half years ago that we were actually going to be able to push them over the edge.
Well, you know, even the most conservative of the conservatives, and I'm talking about conservatives who really like, don't want to rock the boat or anything, and you're talking about Victoria, Tweed and Tea, the Victoria Constituency Association, the Conservative Party of Canada, passed a resolution a couple of years ago and actually got it to the convention floor last year, as I recall. Maybe it was even 2 years ago, saying that at the very least get rid of Section 13, which is the anti-free speech section, and that was actually passed by the convention. And so, yeah, I was sort of optimistic that, hey, maybe we're going to be seeing some changes here. And so far, nothing. Absolutely nothing.
No, I don't think it's going on the radar right now. I don't know if it's going to be in the near future either, which is kind of sad.
Well, actually, I am going to put it on the radar because Roadkill Radio is developing the 10 things that Premier Clark can do when she has to pay the $1.6 billion back to the feds when we extinguish the HST. And one of the recommendations will be the Human Rights Commission.
Get rid of it.
Absolutely.
Oh, brilliant idea.
Huge amounts
Very
of money.
Very nice, Carrie.
Thank you, Terry O'Neill.
I didn't know about that. Very good.
I like that.
Yeah. So
the big question now, guys, and maybe you can help me this, where on the list should we make it? Do you want it 2, 1, number 1, though?
Our
tech guys say 1.
Says number 1.
Yeah. I don't know, John. What do you think?
That'd be easy to do. I mean,
think of the money we would save. Think of the angst we would save. Think of all those things. We'd actually look like a leader, you know, in this whole thing. So I will put it on the radar for you.
Yeah.
All right.
So top 10 things that we can get rid of to
pay
save
the
$1.6 billion.
No, we have to pay it back,
pay
darling.
It back.
We have
to pay
it back.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We've got to find it somewhere.
I like it.
And I'm not going to pay any more in tax.
Okay. I like it. I like it.
You know, one thing that's going on right now that I really think pulls this all together is there's a big issue with security in the courtrooms. We don't have enough sheriffs to provide security.
Well, five
or
rooms?
To provide, yeah. You know, to transfer inmates. And so we're having these trials being suspended. In some cases, charges are thrown out altogether for some serious violent criminal offenses. And yet we're running the BC Rights Human Rights Tribunal prosecuting people for offending hecklers in comedy clubs and all other types of nonsense, and not letting people that are intoxicated and swinging golf clubs get into nightclubs. We don't seem to have any shortage of resources to deal with those types of cases, and yet we've got this misplaced priority where we can't even fund the courts to operate efficiently. So I mean, you know, maybe in an ideal world, one of those progressive worlds, whatever that's supposed to mean, maybe you can have these things. But right now, if we can't even run our criminal courts and our family courts because of a lack of sheriffs, I think the first thing you do is you shut down the tribunal altogether.
Absolutely.
You divert those funds. The Attorney General has no basis to fund something like that when we can't even keep our courts running.
Well, are you familiar with the case about the guy who was discriminated against because they wouldn't let him adopt a dog that was the reincarnation of his dead dog?
I missed that one.
Oh, I'll
but,
send that one
you know,
to you.
They're all discriminated against. Everyone's discriminated against. And the first place that wants to kind of hear that grievance are these human rights tribunals and commissions. It's not a court of last resort. It's the first place to go, because they'll take absolutely anything.
Well,
when these things were started, they were all about hearing legitimate issues around discrimination, usually around ethnicity and religion, where people were being denied services, employment, housing, etc. And the reality is that just doesn't seem to happen enough to keep these things in business. So they've got to find other issues to go after. And so what's it been? They've gone after cartoons. They've gone after publishers. They go after comedians.
Well, they went
after restaurants. It's just endless.
Well, they went after me, John, and I had a very interesting relationship with the BC Human Rights Tribunal, because I got into trouble because I gave tools to parents to exercise parental rights within the public indoctrination system, and that ticked off a whole bunch of Yahoo gay activists within the schools. So they hauled me up before the Human Rights Commission, and I guess I was supposed to get scared because we know that it's all left-wing. Well, I tend not to get fearful of these things. I looked at it as a rather brilliant opportunity to bring truth to people. And, of course, the minute I stood up to fight, well, then the gay activists didn't really want to proceed with the complaint, so it kind of hung about. So then I, as the person who was complained against, had to force the tribunal to make the complainants go forward with their complaint. Then the complainants didn't want to appear as witnesses, so I had to subpoena the complainants that made the complaint against me to show up. It was a circus beyond circuses.
Well,
and,
you know,
and at the end of the day, after one witness, they withdrew the complaint.
Well, it just shows you what a kangaroo court the human rights tribunals are. And that's something that actually has come to the attention of Saskatchewan Premier Brad Wall. John, as you point out, that he's apparently taking some moves to go ahead to enforce rules of evidence and proper procedure on the province's commission. Well, what do you think the human rights industry is going to think about that move?
Well, you know, when Brad Wall started raising this, initially he was talking about shutting it down. And so he's even backed off. What he's talking about is great, bringing in some due procedure, some rules of evidence, et cetera, follow the rule of law. But even that is a few steps backward from what he originally wanted to do. If he can bring this in, it would be great, because it might compel the other tribunals and commissions to follow suit. But the last thing they want to do is have to follow the rules. And what the story Kerry says is just evidence of this. As soon as it wasn't somebody coming in there and is going to be very meek and bring their checkbook and apologize and go for deprogramming sensitivity training, all of a sudden they're not so sure they really want this. They don't like people that fight back, and that's why they didn't like Levant and Stein and McLean's. They don't want people bringing their dossier and lawyering up. They want people to grovel and vow to change their ways.
So what happens, by the way, in stuff like that, and you see this time and again, when somebody really does put up a fight and gets national attention or even fairly substantial provincial attention, they won't convict because they're afraid then that ends up going to a real court, and then it might end up going to the Supreme Court, and that's the last thing they want it to have happen, because a lot of these things will end up being struck down. So they'll find reasons. They'll go against the Section 7 in BC or Section 13, which is so broad you should be able to convict anybody under those things for saying anything that's disrespectful or hurtful or anything, or doesn't even necessarily have to if somebody takes offense. They don't want that to go to a court.
Terry.
Yes, yes, right. Let's talk for a second about what's going on at the Canadian Human Rights Commission. Jennifer Lynch is gone, and we now have an acting chief commissioner, David Langtree. Now, his biography is still on the is already on the Canadian Human Rights Commission site because he was the vice chair before, the vice head of it. And one of the things that really struck me about his biography is that it says he is an accomplished senior executive and lawyer with more than 23 years of combined progressive experience in the private practice of law and public sector administration. It seems to me that this is the only government bureaucracy that would say, yes, we want to hire you, and it's a good thing that you are so biased, because progressive is, you know, that obviously that's his bias, and that makes him, they're proud of that. They want that to be there. You know, there's no shred of impartiality here. If you were to put that in the biography of a judge saying, well, he's got 23 years or she's got 15 years of progressive jurisprudence behind her, you know, there'd be a clamor to get rid of that judge. Oh, but for somebody who is the head of a commission, the Human Rights Commission, that's great stuff.
Yeah, I mean, the people that make a living in the grievance industry and pursuing liberal orthodoxy, they're surrounded by these like-minded beings their entire day. And you know, after a while, they just assume everybody is like the same as they are.
Oh yeah,
and,
everybody
must be progressive.
I'm progressive.
Everyone I know is progressive, and it's not like they think that is makes them an outsider, or that even might make them kind of at odds with 50% of the population. I think there's a great analogy that way back in the day when Nixon destroyed McGovern, he just cleaned up, and there was a story in the New Yorker by the woman who was the film critic, and she said, "I don't know how Nixon could have won. Nobody I know voted for him." And it's sort of like these people that are involved in human rights as human rights activists and in the commissions. Everyone they know in their social and professional circle think like this, and they just assume that the rest of the world must as well.
Yeah, you don't have to go as far afield as Pauline Kael of the New Yorker, who probably was the film critic at the time. The great Pauline Kael, whose famous book is, of course, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, a compilation of her best writing. A little trivia there. You can just look to British Columbia and the then editor-in-chief of the Vancouver Sun, Ian Haysom, writing this wide-eyed editorial after the Reform Party won 52 seats in the House of Commons. And he just said how shocked he was because he looked around. He said he didn't think there was a single reformer in the newsroom, and we just didn't see this coming. It kind of proved the point that we at the BC Report had been making for quite a while about the downstream media.
Okay, but anyway. Jerry, you bring up, and I want to get back to the Guy Earl case because this is just, okay, number one, it's our tax dollars, and it just frustrates me to no end that it's going $22,000, but... You know, whatever happened to the good old days where if something like that happened and this woman was truly that righteous, why not go out, get 15 of your friends? You know, every customer that comes into that place, if every customer that comes into that place, you know, ask them not to do business there. You know, like, why are we expecting this mother government mentality? This oh poor me, I mean, she's got a little feistiness, and why he didn't make a claim against her, I don't know. You know, he should have filed a human rights complaint against her for, you know, throwing water on him.
Comedians are not a protected minority, group.
He's a male.
That's not a protected group.
He's a male
group.
Heterosexual.
That's not a protected group.
Oh, your sexual orientation is. Heterosexuality might not qualify,
well,
though.
He wasn't being heckled because he's a heterosexual.
You know, back in a few years ago, Arizona got rid of soft body tissue as something that you can go seek litigation over. So basically, they disallowed whiplash claims.
Huh.
And all of a sudden, no one is going to their doctor with whiplash. As soon as it was something that you could no longer get a payout from the insurance company for, nobody had whiplash anymore following fender benders. And if these commissions were shut down, I don't think you would have very many people citing discrimination or bigotry or exclusion. But right now there's an opportunity, and more people know about it, that you can go and get a check.
Yeah.
You can go and get 15 grand, and all you got to do is just tell a good story, and the odds are with you right then and there.
Yeah.
So I mean, I think we encourage people, like the woman that went after Guy Earle, we encourage people like that because we make this available. There's a quick, easy, tax-free payday right there. And there's no, it's not like going to a real court where if you lose, you might have to pay for someone else's legal fees
or
anything.
You don't even have to lose, John, because I went after the complainants in my case. I mean, this was the slam dunk. I mean, you start a complaint, you don't want to go through with it. A person has to subpoena your complainants. Don't you think I should have got awarded costs?
In
the real world, if there was the rule of law and some due process in there and real judges, that's probably what would have happened.
Yeah.
Now, Carrie suggested that the best thing to do in a case like this with this guy Earle, would have been for the people who thought they were offended by what Earle said to go out and get some of their friends and picket or, you know, organize a... organize some boycott or something like that. Yeah, that's the way things work. And actually, we have an example of that playing out in the United States just over the last 2 days. Tracy Morgan, the star of 30 Rock, said some had some very hurtful and pretty atrocious stuff about homosexuals in a monologue or a rant that he was on. And the whole world is dumping on him, right?
His
friends.
Yeah, he's not going to be hosting any award show.
Nobody's hauling him into court or a pseudo court or a kangaroo court. You know, and you could say that's, now you can discuss the merits of what he said, you can defend him or not defend him or whatever, but it plays out in the public sphere. He's apologized profusely and he got friends sticking up for him. You know, this is the way things go, you know. We live in an interconnected world, and we do offend people sometimes. We do, you know, and if we do, you know, we have to make it right or whatever. Sometimes people never forgive us. That's fine, but that's the way life unfolds here. Now, speaking of unfolding, the Canadian Human Rights Commission Media Relations Department does not have time to answer my phone calls, as I think you've heard. But they do have time to put up press releases for announcing what sounds like it's a pretty important event coming up. And I'd like you, John, to sort of speculate on what this might be, and I'll tell you how they're describing it. They're saying that on Friday, June 17th, that's this coming Friday, the commission will hold a news conference regarding a major change to Canada's human rights landscape. As of June 18, 2011, over 700,000 people, primarily residents of First Nations communities, will enjoy the same human rights protections as everyone else in Canada for the first time. David Langtry, the acting chief commissioner of whom I spoke earlier, will brief the media on implications of this change and the important challenges that lie ahead. What's this all about?
That's an odd one because it's not up to the commission to rewrite their... The Canadian human rights legislation so that it applies to First Nations.
Has there been a court
decision? It specifically doesn't apply to them. That's in black and white. Without Parliament making a move, I'm just absolutely clueless about what they could possibly think they can do. I mean, it's not their call to widen the scope of this legislation.
We haven't missed some sort of legislation or some court ruling ordering this.
I think they're just taking a cue from Chief Justice McLaughlin. They'll just read it into the code.
Wow. Yeah, I think...
let's expand it.
I think John is right, though, that it's not their... I mean, they're supposed to be bureaucrats administering... This is a commission administering the operation of... I don't know. I thought, have I missed something here? And I spent some time doing some search on the internet to see if there had been some court decision recently or some amendment that had snuck in, and maybe I didn't go back far enough, but I can't remember anything. So it does certainly sound like we're going to be getting. So this will go against the Indian Act, right? So
I'm sure they would love that this was the case because that might be more work for them. In most jurisdictions, there's not enough. They're saying there's not enough complaints, so they're actually encouraging people to complain. To seek out some instance where you might have been offended or excluded. Kind of widen their potential number of clients.
Where's that happening?
We did a show on that, Terry. In the brochures from new immigrants into this country, they get pamphlets how to make a complaint if you're discriminated against.
Is there something more than that going on too, John?
In Alberta, they were specifically sending out, doing mail-outs and brochures.
Right. That's
letting people know about the venues they have.
If you're a new Canadian,
they're discriminated against.
That's right. If you're a new Canadian, you have a right to gripe.
Yep, there you go. That's it.
Ooh, I just made that one up.
You're good.
Write that one down.
I've got it.
We're developing a Roadkill Radio dictionary right now, by the way, and we have a few things on there, such as, what are some of the ones? Anyway, right to gripe. There you go, right to gripe. Put that one down. Anyway, so do you expect to see anything out of the provincial government here in British Columbia regarding their odious Section 7 and the entire legislation? You know, when the Liberal government was first elected, it got rid of the commission and just kept the tribunal in place. Do you see any?
Yeah, I mean, when Gordon Campbell did that, I mean, I thought that was great. And particularly, that was one of the very first things he did. His first day on the job, he fired Mary Wu Sims. And, I cracked open a bottle for that. I mean, I was just so thrilled when I heard that. Then he shut down the commission.
Yeah.
I wish he'd gone the whole way. Now, he took a lot of flack that supposedly rolled back human rights legislation, and he's taking us back to the dark era and such regarding discrimination and a bunch of nonsense. But, you know, with Christy Clark in there, I mean, you know, she is a dyed-in-the-wool federal liberal. She loves this type of stuff. I mean, if we didn't have a commission, she'd put one in. Or a tribunal, she put it in. She may very well bring back the commission. I mean, this is exactly something that is very consistent with her whole adult political orientation.
Mm-hmm.
So, if anything, I see the tribunal must be thrilled that Christy Clark is in the premier's chair.
What about the Mark Lemire case? That's wound its way up. We have dates now, I think, that it's going before the Supreme Court of Canada. What are the implications of that going to be?
Yeah, that's probably one of the watershed cases that is going to have an enormous impact on the future of the commission. There's only been two or three cases that probably are significant as that one, and there's been so many efforts, such a concerted effort to shut that one down. I mean, there was the Lemire case where the commission tried to bar media from even attending the hearings, and they tried to invoke in that it was a matter of national security that this be not made public and it be held in camera. So, I mean, that's the paranoia that the commission has. You know, Lemire wasn't a high-profile individual. It was very easy to dismiss him as a bit of a crank, and he's turned out to be a pretty sharp individual, and he's taking this all the way. And that, again, this is what we talked about earlier. They don't like people that fight back.
Well, we've got the Watcott case as well that just sort of resurfaced in my mind as well. It probably hasn't done things as prudently as Mark has. I mean, Mark's documentation, we've had him on the show. I mean, what an extraordinary effort he has put into the documentation and how his case has been handled. But the Supreme Court of Canada is also hearing the Watcott case.
Yeah. It's an era right now where there's going to be some opportunity for change. I mean, this might be part and parcel of the announcement coming up regarding the expanding the legislation to First Nations, because there's a couple watershed cases that are very, very likely going to put this back on the on the burner. I mean, one of the things that Terry, why you probably aren't getting your calls calls returned, is the commission probably made a strategic error in talking to the media and opening up revelations about what was going on and being very, I had no problem getting information from them. So this is probably a reaction to that, to say, hey, we got nothing but flack when we were cooperative, so let's just not talk to our enemies, especially in the media.
Maybe that's a hallmark
of the enemy.
Of it.
You're the enemy.
That's right.
John's
Thank you.
John's the good guy.
Hey, I'm on the enemies list. I know that.
Yeah, to give you an example of that, I mean, you might recall the big day when the commissioners were going to have to testify at Mark Lemire. They fired their stenographer, so there was nobody to take notes. And this was all of a sudden, now Mark Lemire is at this enormous disadvantage because he either hires his own stenographer or he doesn't have a transcript with which to base his appeal on. Apparently there was no transcript. Well, they sent me one. I gave it to Mark. But they did have a transcript that supposedly didn't exist and that was never transcribed. And they sent me a copy of it. I mean, but this is how sleazy these people are, and you know, absolutely no respect for due process, no respect for the rights of the accused person, and the last thing they want is any semblance of the rule of law, because all of a sudden now they can't make up their own rules as they go along.
Okay, thank you very much, John. A final word. Down with the human wrongs commissions. Absolutely.
Obliterate them.
Extinguish, destroy.
Fire them all.
Thank you, John Martin. Keep up the great work.
Thanks so much. Nice talking to both of you.
Okay, great talking to you. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And John Martin, criminology professor, University of the Fraser Valley out in Abbotsford, has a keen interest in human rights commissions. And we've had him on the show before, mm-hmm. I think one other time, talking about this issue. And I'm glad he's still on it. And
well,
we
you know
too.
What? All of these issues just get so overwhelming, Terry. You know, we just need to take the slice and dice approach, I think. And that's what, you know, maybe all of us civil, common sense Canadians just need to get together for about 6 years and just get rid of all this stuff.
Oh, 6 years. How about the
elections?
Term of a majority government? That might do it. 40 years or so.
No, no, because governments, they get in there and then they wimp out.
Yeah, well, you know what? It's early days on the federal conservative government. You know what? I wouldn't be surprised if there's going to be a few more things coming in that a little more than they could do as a minority anyway.
Yeah, but you think the HST is a good thing for us too.
Well,
which we don't have time
right
to get
now.
Into.
Right now, given all the options, yes.
Okay, we've got one caller, and I know that's about the update on the Burnaby situation. Hi. So we've got
Susan.
2 minutes.
Hi. Who's there?
Hello, Carrie. Hello, Terry.
Oh, hi. Charter Lau.
Yes.
All right. We've got 2 minutes. Can you give us a quick rundown of the events tonight at the Burnaby School Board offices? The trustees voted, and I understand unanimously, in favor of adopting this policy.
Yes. The meeting is super boring. And basically, they just read through all the policies that they ran through before. And then the most exciting part is when they vote. So they voted in favor unanimously, but with two trustees' absence.
Now, was this policy 5.45 amended from the original one that we all saw, or is it the same policy?
Yeah, it got some lipstick on the pig, so to speak.
Lipstick on the pig. Okay,
yeah.
That's about all then. Okay. Well, listen, we've run out of time. We're going to have to follow this up. Thank you very much for calling in.
Yes, Charlie,
we're
thank
right
you.
At the end of our show.
Take care.
I do appreciate it. Thank
Bye.
You very much.
All right,
good.
So obviously that's a story
okay.
that's not going to go away.
No, we'll see what color lipstick it is, and we'll see if it's smudge-proof or not. We'll do that probably next week or two, right?
Poor pig.
And we have other issues. I want to talk next week, an issue that we're on to regarding the former Planned Parenthood of British Columbia.
Mm.
On a political initiative that could cost taxpayers a lot of money and raises all sorts of health issues as well.
Well, I'll add that to my list of what we can get rid of to compensate
right.
for the $1.6 billion.
Good. Okay.
And we've got Miriam Grossman, Dr. Miriam Grossman, wonderful author of What Are You Teaching My Kids? And she claims to be 100% not politically correct.
Excellent.
It's perfect
roadkill. She'll fit right in here. Good. Well, thank you. I'm perfect roadkill fodder here.
Well, wow, did that show go by fast?
It sure did.
Good night, everybody.
Good night. Bye-bye. See you next week.
You've been listening to Roadkill Radio. Join us again next week for another trip down the superhighway of information, fact, and truth.